Chapter 5. There were days when even a boy genius like Grover Lakewood was glad for time off from the laboratory to clear his head of the intricacies of aiming a gun at a moving target from a moving ship. The fire control expert spent most days and many nights inventing myriad calculations to counter the effects of roll, pitch, yaw, and trajectory curves. It was absolutely fascinating work, made all the more intense by the fact that Lakewood had to devise ways for ordinary minds to apply his calculations in the midst of battle when guns were thundering, seas breaking, and steel splinters howling through the smoke. In his spare time, he toyed with futuristic formulas to tackle the challenges of cross-rolling, where he imagined his ships firing ahead instead of broadside, and tried to take into account the ever-increasing ranges of big guns and the ever-flattening trajectories of high-velocity shells. Sometimes he had to turn himself upside down like a salt shaker to empty his brain. Rock climbing offered such a break. A day of rock climbing started with the train ride to Ridgefield, Connecticut, then a drive across the New York state line in a rented Ford car to Johnson Park in the Westchester estate country, then a 2-mile hike to a remote hill called Agar Mountain, all leading to a slow, hard climb up a rock wall to the top of a cliff. The train ride was a chance to just stare out the window for 2 hours and watch the land change from city to farm. Driving the auto required his full attention to the rutted roads. The hike filled his lungs with fresh air and got his blood going. The climb demanded complete concentration to avoid falling off the cliff and landing a long, long way down on his skull. This unusually warm weekend for early spring had brought walkers to the park. Striding purposefully in his tweed jacket, knickers, and boots, Lakewood passed an old lady on her constitutional, exchanged hearty good mornings with several hikers, and observed, longingly, a couple holding hands. Lakewood was quite good-looking, sturdily built, with a ready smile, but working 6 and 7 days a week, often bunking on a cot at the lab, made it hard to meet girls. And for some reason, the nieces and daughters that the older engineer's wives marched in to meet him were never that appealing. It usually didn't bother him. He was too busy to be lonely. But now and then, when he saw a young couple, he thought, "One day I'll get lucky too." He hiked deeper into the park until he found himself alone on a narrow path through dense forest. When he saw movement ahead, he was disappointed because he was hoping to have the cliff to himself and concentrate on climbing in peace and quiet. The person ahead stopped and sat on a fallen log. When he drew closer, he saw it was a girl, and a petite and very pretty girl at that, dressed for climbing in trousers and lace-up boots like his. Red hair spilled from her brimmed hat. As she turned her head abruptly toward him, her hair flashed in the sunlight, bright as a shell burst. She looked Irish, with paper-white skin, a small upturned nose, a jaunty smile, and flashing blue eyes, and he suddenly remembered meeting her before. Last summer. What was her name? Let's see, where had they met? Yes! The company picnic hosted by Captain Lowell Falconer, the Spanish-American war hero to whom Lakewood reported his rangefinder developments. What was her name? He was close enough to wave and say hello now. She was watching him with her jaunty smile, and her eyes were lighting up with recognition, though she looked as puzzled as he felt. "Fancy meeting you here," she called tentatively. "Hello," said Lakewood. "Was last time at the shore?" "Fire Island," said Lakewood. "Captain Falconer's clambake." "Of course," she said, sounding relieved. I knew you from somewhere." Lakewood searched his memory, goading himself. "Lakewood, if you can land a 12-inch, 500-pound shell on a dreadnought steaming at 16 knots from a ship rolling in 10-foot seas, you ought to be able to remember the name of this Gibson girl lovely who is smiling at you." "Miss D," he said, snapping his fingers. Catherine D. And then, because his mother had raised him properly, Lakewood doffed his hat and extended his hand and said, Grover Lakewood, how very nice to see you again. When her smile spread into one of delighted recognition, the sunlight of her brilliant hair seemed to migrate into her eyes. Lakewood thought he had died and gone to heaven. What a wonderful coincidence, she said. What are you doing here? Climbing, said Lakewood. Climbing the rocks. She stared in what appeared to be disbelief. Now that is a coincidence. How do you mean? Well, that's why I'm here. There's a cliff up that path that I'm going to climb. She cocked an eyebrow that was so pale as to be almost invisible. Did you follow me here? What? Lakewood flushed and began to stammer. No, I... Catherine D. laughed. I'm teasing you. I didn't mean you followed me. How would you even have known where to find me? No, it's a perfect coincidence. Again, she cocked her head. But not really. Do you remember when we talked at the clambake? Lakewood nodded. They hadn't talked as much as he would have liked to. She had seemed to know everybody on the captain's yacht and had flitted from one person to another, chatting up a storm. But he remembered. We decided we both liked to be out of doors, even though I have to wear a hat for the sun because my skin is so pale. More pale skin had been visible that summery day. Lakewood remembered round, firm arms bared almost to her shoulders, her shapely neck, her ankles. Shall we? She asked. What? Climb the rocks? Yes, yes. Yes, let's. They started along the path, brushing shoulders where it narrowed. Every time they touched, he felt an electric shock, and he was thoroughly smitten by the time she asked, Do you still work for the captain? Oh, yes. I seem to recall that you told me something about cannons. They call them guns in the Navy, not cannons. Really? I didn't know there was a difference. You said they. Aren't you in the Navy? No, I work in a civilian position, but I report to Captain Falconer. He seemed like a very nice man. Lakewood smiled. Nice is not the first word that comes to mind for Captain Falconer. Driven, demanding, and daunting came closer to the mark. Someone told me he was inspiring. That he is. She said, I'm trying to remember who said that. He was very handsome, and older than you, I think. Lakewood felt a hot stab of jealousy. Catherine D. was talking about Ron Wheeler, the star of the naval torpedo station at Newport, who all the girls fell over. Most of them are older than me, he answered, hoping to get off the subject of the handsome Wheeler. Catherine put him at ease with a heartwarming smile. Well, whoever he was, I remember that he called you the boy genius. Lakewood laughed. Why do you laugh? Captain Falconer said it too, and he was a hero in the Spanish-American War. Are you a boy genius? No, I just started young is all. It's such a new field. I got in at the beginning. How could guns be new? Guns have been around forever. Lakewood stopped walking and turned to face her. That is very interesting. But no, guns have not been around forever. Not like they are now. Rifled guns can fire tremendous ranges no one ever imagined before. Why, just the other day I was aboard a battleship off Sandy Hook and...
You were on a battleship?
Oh, sure. I go out on them all the time.
Really?
On the Atlantic firing range. Just last week, the gunnery officer said to me, the new dreadnoughts could hit Yonkers from here. Catherine's pretty eyes grew enormous. Yonkers? I don't know about that. I mean, the last time I sailed into New York on the Lusitania, it was a clear day, but I couldn't see Yonkers from the ocean. The Lusitania, thought Lakewood. Not only is she pretty, but she's rich. Well, it's hard to see Yonkers, but at sea you can spot a ship that far. The trick is hitting it. They resumed walking, shoulders bumping on the narrow path, as he told her how the invention of smokeless powder allowed the spotters to see farther because the ship was less shrouded in gun smoke. The spotters range with the guns. They judge by the splashes of shot whether they've fallen short or overshot. You've probably read in the newspaper that's the reason for all big gun ships. All the guns the same caliber? So firing one, in fact, aims all. She seemed much more interested than he would expect of a pretty girl and listened wide-eyed, pausing repeatedly to stop walking and gaze at him as if mesmerized. Lakewood kept talking. Nothing secret, he told himself. Nothing about the latest range-finding gyros providing continuous aim to hunt the roll. Nothing about fire control that she couldn't read in the papers. He did boast that he got interested in rock climbing while scrambling up a 100-foot cage mast the Navy was developing to spot shell splashes at greater distances. But he did not say that the mast builders were experimenting with coiled lightweight steel tubing to make them immune to shell hits. He did not reveal that cage masts were also intended as platforms for the latest range-finding machines. Nor did he mention the hydraulic engines coupled to the gyro for elevating turret guns, and certainly not a word about Hull 44. "I'm confused," she said with a warm smile. "Maybe you can help me understand. A man told me that ocean liners are much bigger than dreadnoughts. He said that Lusitania and Mauritania are 44,000 tons, but the Navy's Michigan will be only 16,000. Liners are floating hotels, Lakewood answered dismissively. Dreadnoughts are fortresses. But the Lusitania and Mauritania steam faster than dreadnoughts. He called them greyhounds. Well, if you think of Lusitania and Mauritania as greyhounds, imagine a dreadnought as a wolf. She laughed. Now I understand. And your job is to give it teeth. My job, Lakewood corrected proudly, is to sharpen its teeth. Again she laughed and touched his arm. Then what is Captain Falconer's job? Grover Lakewood considered carefully before he answered. Anyone could read the official truth. Articles were devoted daily to every aspect of the dreadnought race, from the expense to the national glory to gala launchings to flat-footed foreign spies nosing around the Brooklyn Navy Yard claiming to be newspapermen. Captain Falconer is the Navy's special inspector of target practice. He became a gunnery expert after the Battle of Santiago. Even though we sank every Spanish ship in Cuba, our guns scored only 2% hits. Captain Falconer vowed to improve that. The steeply sloped face of Agar Mountain loomed ahead.
Oh, look, said Catherine. We have it all to ourselves. No one's here but us.
They stopped at the foot of the cliff.
Wasn't that crazy man who killed himself blowing up his piano involved with battleships?
How did you hear about that? Asked Lakewood. The Navy had kept the tragedy out of the papers, admitting only that there had been an explosion at the gun factory.
Everyone in Washington was talking about it, said Catherine.
Is that where you live?
I was visiting a friend. Did you know the man?
Yes. He was a fine man, answered Lakewood, staring up the rocks, surveying a route. In fact, he was on the captain's yacht for the clam bake.
I don't believe I met him.
It was a darned sad thing. Terrible loss. Catherine D. turned out to be a strong climber. Lakewood could barely keep up. He was new to the sport and noticed that her fingers were so strong that she would raise her entire weight by the grip of one hand. When she did, she was able to swing her body to reach high for the next grip.
You climb like a monkey.
That's not a very nice compliment. She pretended to pout as she waited for him to catch up with her. Who wants to look like a monkey? Lakewood figured he better save his breath. When they were 80 feet off the ground and the tops of the trees looked like feathers far below, she suddenly pulled farther ahead of him.
Say, where'd you learn to climb like that?
The nuns at my convent school took us climbing on the Matterhorn. At that moment, Grover Lakewood's hands were spread wide, gripping crevices to either side as he felt for his next toehold. Catherine D. had reached a position 15 feet directly above him. She smiled.
Oh, Mr. Lakewood.
He craned his neck to see her. It looked like she was holding a giant turtle in her strong white hands. Except it couldn't be a turtle this early in the year. It was a large rock.
Careful with that, he called.
Too late. It slipped from her hands.
No, it didn't.
She opened her hands.